is an Odyssey original.
This is KNX in Depth. I'm Rob Archer.
I'm Charles Feldman. Should the government regulate artificial intelligence? We'll go in depth.
LA and some other big cities might be getting dumber and smaller at the same time. Also, do you have thoughts on the current state of LA and Mayor Karen Bass? Well, Rick Caruso does, and he'll be here to tell us what he thinks.
So the city is getting smaller and dumber?
Yeah.
Like really dumb?
I don't know how dumb we're getting, but, you know, never underestimate the ability of things to be dumb.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we start, though, with AI and today's congressional hearing. Dan Ives is a tech analyst with Wedbush Securities. Dan, thanks for coming back with us.
Great to be here.
So tell us a little bit about what it is that the government, the U.S. government, is perhaps thinking of doing and how the AI industry, and of course it is a giant industry now, how they are likely to respond.
Look, I think for now it's more exploratory. Nothing's going to happen probably for the next 18 months from a government perspective. But I do think they're right now in the exploratory stages to understand, to put the guardrails in when it comes to AI around some sort of regulations on the data side. That's going to be the big focus in terms of the data piece, the privacy, and what that could be about.
You know, I have to confess, Dan, whenever I see a congressional hearing involving tech or internet or anything of that nature, because I get the feeling, I always walk away with the feeling that most of the people asking the questions there in that committee meeting or in that congressional meeting don't truly understand what they were talking about. Is that the case here? Do you think that members of Congress have a handle on what AI is and what the real danger that it represents is?
Yeah, look, I think there's always a grandstanding component. I mean, we've seen it from the Facebook hearings to others where you come away from there being like, you know, that the politicians don't really have a good understanding. That would probably be, you know, a compliment in terms of what's actually happening. I think this time it is different. I mean, Altman met with them last night. You know, I think They've really been ramping up. I think overall, you know, we've heard from people in the Beltway to better try to understand AI because this is something that's transformative in terms of the impact on consumers, on enterprises, and it's something that has massive ability from a technology. But it's not just the U.S. government. Others are as well. Are there guardrails that need to be put in, understanding what's happening here? And I think that's really what this is about in terms of setting the scene.
You know, Dan, I think that when it comes down to it, the question that people are pondering is whether we should be embracing AI and being almost joyous about a technological marvel, or should we be deathly afraid of this?
Look, I think it depends on the perspective. I mean, if you're a 15-year-old looking at needing to write a paper for history, it's like winning the lotto. It's the best thing that ever happened. But for others, look, in terms of where this is all going, I mean, the technology, I've covered tech since late 90s. It's probably the most powerful technology that I've ever seen. So I think in the near term, it's actually going to increase jobs among developers, among engineers. I think there's huge opportunities here, and we see that with big tech going after it. The fear, as you're talking about, is what's on the other side? Well, what's the negative? And we've seen it with social media. And I think that's really trying to put some guardrails on this technology that it doesn't have the unintended consequences that everyone's afraid of. But a lot of that is going to be on the private side.
Right.
It's not going to be the government that's really going to regulate that, because a lot of times they just make it worse.
All right. Dan Ives, tech analyst with Wedbush Securities. Thanks for joining us.
Now, by the way, since we are talking about AI, you don't want to miss our next KNX News Town Hall. It's this Thursday, live at 4 p.m. reality in an AI world with voices from Hollywood, tech, and beyond, although I'm not quite sure how beyond. It sounds a little spooky, mm-hmm. but beyond. For free tickets, go to knxnews.com/townhall. I'll be there. Mike Simpson will be there. Rob, you're invited if you want to come along.
Okay.
Right now, though, L.A., San Francisco, and Seattle were once hubs of the best and the brightest, but that's changing. There's more and more college-educated people. Well, they're just leaving, and they're leaving other coastal cities in droves. Hans Johnson is a demographer with the Public Policy Institute of California, and Jim Dalrymple is a writer who moved from L.A. to Salt Lake City. Hans, let's start with you. So why are all these college-educated people taking off?
Well, you know, first, the big picture is for a long time, California had been attracting college graduates from other states more than we were sending to those states. And Los Angeles, San Diego, San Francisco, and then, as you mentioned, some other cities, coastal cities, including Seattle, were the recipients of a lot of those college graduates. And now, over the last 2 years, we've seen a sea change, a reversal in that flow. To be clear, most people aren't leaving, but substantial numbers are. And what we found is that the vast majority of that increase is due to remote work. And specifically, what has happened is that people in places like Los Angeles and San Francisco, who are now able to keep their job, and often a well-paying job in San Francisco or Los Angeles, and live somewhere else and buy a house that they couldn't afford to buy in one of these coastal cities or pay lower rent, has led to this flow out of the state.
Jim, you're a writer. That's a very creative thing to be. And you moved from L.A. to Salt Lake City. Did it have something to do with the ability to do your work wherever you want to be, and you just found it cool to buy something nicer? Or were there some other reasons for your move?
Yeah, absolutely. We moved out of East Hollywood and to Salt Lake City in 2018, and it was no coincidence that that move happened about 6 months after I got a new job that was remote. So it predated the pandemic, but it was absolutely remote work that enabled that. And yeah, cost of living and that kind of thing was like a major factor for us. So we were able to afford a bigger house, sort of a kind of a better overall situation for our then one child, now three kids. Kind of all of those same things Hans just mentioned.
But Jim, are there things in Salt Lake City that just don't live up to your expectations compared to Los Angeles? Or do you think that it's just fine?
area in Salt Lake City. But I won't lie. I miss a lot of things about living in Los Angeles. Where we lived in East Hollywood, we were right kind of on the border of Thai town. I mean, there's 200 Thai restaurants. We could walk to the Hollywood Bowl. We could walk to Griffith Park. Like, there is an energy in Southern California that I do really miss. But, as time goes by, your priorities change a little bit.
Hans, could we see it heading back in the other direction at some point down the road as more and more creative and college educated people move out of these coastal cities and they move elsewhere? And you've got a new generation of creative people looking at what the old generation did, and we don't want to do that, so they move right back to the coast.
Well, I think there's a couple things there. One is, you're right, when we look at people in their mid-20s, California's still doing okay in Los Angeles and San Francisco in terms of the number of college graduates coming in that age group. But as Jim's life exemplifies, when people start to get a little older, have kids, want to buy a house, that's when we see some of these flows start to increase out of the state. But it was enabled in California by remote work, tremendous increase in remote work during the pandemic for obvious reasons. And I think the big question now is, as employers start to consider requiring employees to come back into the office, whether we will see some reversal or cessation of the flow. And I think right now it's anybody's guess. We don't know exactly, for example, how many firms are going to start requiring employees to be in the office. But if they do, and you've moved to Phoenix or Salt Lake City, you've got a decision to make.
All right. Thank you so much. Hans Johnson, demographer with the Public Policy Institute of California. Also, Jim Dalrymple, a writer, moved from L.A. to Salt Lake City a few years ago.
And coming up, Rick Caruso is back with us. He's got some thoughts on how Karen Bass is doing, and you will not want to miss that.
Right now, though, after the recent mass shooting at a mall outside Dallas, Texas, there were video and pictures circulating on social media that showed bodies lying there on the ground, torn apart. This raises questions about whether media, mainstream media, I should say, and social media should show graphic and violent video and pictures of these events. Michael Griffin is a professor of media and cultural studies at McAllister College in Minnesota. Dave Lopez, now a retired KCBS2 KCAL9 reporter and author of the book It's a Great Life If You Don't Weaken, Family, Faith, and 48 Years on Television. Thank you both for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Pleasure to be here.
Michael, I'll start with you. There is an argument that some are making who are in favor of stronger gun regulations, or specifically a ban, reinvoking the ban on assault weapons. And the argument is if the public could see what assault weapons does to a human body, that they would be more inclined to support calls to bring back that ban on assault weapons. On the other hand, there's already a lot of support for bringing back a ban on assault weapons. So would this do more to push that, or will this not make a difference to the politicians?
So I'm pretty skeptical that any particular image or video clip or whatever in and of itself will have much impact on public opinion. I think that people have access, if they want, to see images like that already online. People, they circulate oftentimes in very malicious ways as well as informative ways. I think that, to have some impact on the public conversation, the images would have to be used in a very contextualized way as part of a discussion that was very information-based. And I don't think just the emotional appeal of an image by itself would make too much difference.
Dave Lopez, as your book points out, you spent 48 years in television. The thinking always in TV about whether to show certain images, graphic images of horrific crimes is, we don't want to offend the audience. Yet others would argue that the mere act of the violence is enough of an offense, and maybe people ought to see and hear exactly what is happening. Where do you come down on this?
Well, I used to get in arguments a lot when I would cover a story that, they wouldn't let us show the crime scene, not the dead bodies, but just the idea that someone had been shot and was there. I mean, I remember one time they even got to the point where they wouldn't even let us show the bodies that were covered. Then they didn't want us to show the bodies being taken into the coroner's office. I don't believe that we should be showing, bodies that are blown to bits and what have you. I mean, people know what an AK-47 can do to a body and what have you. But I do think we have to show just enough to know what the crime is and what has happened, without disrespecting the loved ones of the family that were killed. I remember the most shocking thing that I ever had, and it was fairly young and early in my career. I went down to Baja California, just on the other side of Ensenada, where there was a massive shooting involving a drug cartel. I think 8, 9, 10 family members were massacred in a villa, and I remember walking in there and seeing the other press, a lot of them from the Hispanic press, from the Mexico press, and the bodies weren't covered, blood all over the place, and they were just taking close-ups, stills, video, you name it. I mean, I was stunned at how open we were allowed to shoot things. Now, we couldn't show it on the air back in L.A., but just the idea that we could see that was shocking to me.
Michael, you might recall, you might know more about this than I do, but back in World War II, there was a kind of a prohibition. Newspapers would not show pictures of American war dead. And then there was that picture of dead American soldiers on a beach in the Pacific in the aftermath of a battle. And that did serve to make some people kind of think about if they were supporting the war or if they wanted to support it more. And this is World War II, in which, in simpler times was more of a black and white kind of struggle against freedom and fascism. Do you think that such an image would have the same effect if people got the idea of what real gun violence does, as opposed to what they see in movies, which is even in the worst violent movies, there is some bit of sanitation going on there?
Usually in movies, the level of gore is way beyond anything anyone ever sees in any news photographs. But of course, it's different when you kind of know, at least in the back of your mind, that it's a fictionalized or staged scene of some kind. The photo that I think you're referring to from World War II is from Guadalcanal, and that picture really did stand out at the time. For exactly the reason you described, that they weren't really usually allowed to show casualties or to show American soldiers' bodies. And so when that image came out, it really jumped out and stood out for people. Over time, I think people have become much more used to seeing images like that a lot, whether it's American soldiers or whether it's other people, refugees in other parts of the world and so forth. And again, I pretty much agree with everything that Dave said, but I think that the images, what I always write about is it's not so much what the image is or what it is of, but how it is used by the media. How is it contextualized? What else is it presented with? What kinds of text and caption accompany it? All those things, I think, are the crucial factors that really make a difference.
All right. Thank you so much, Michael Griffin, professor at McAllister College in Minnesota. And Dave Lopez, of course, retired KCBS KCAL 9 reporter, author of a book called It's a Great Life If You Don't Weaken, Family, Faith, and 48 Years on Television.
You're listening to KNX In Depth, along with Rob Archer. I'm Charles Feldman.
Well, you know, Rick Caruso, he may have lost the race to become L.A.'s next mayor, and apparently he's doing okay. He has not disappeared. He's still very much hard at work here in the city. Mr. Caruso, thank you so much for being in studio with us today. It's nice seeing you again.
It's great being here. Thank you for the invitation.
I was going to say he not only didn't disappear, but he's actually here.
Surprisingly, he's looking pretty well. Doesn't look like depressed or, I would be. If I lost an election, I would have been curled up in a fetal ball.
Well, that's because nobody would vote for you.
So. Exactly. And I would feel bad about that.
I'd feel bad for you, too.
But our main question, Mr. Caruso, is, you did not become the next mayor. Karen Bass defeated you. You guys are friends. You know each other well. How do you think she's doing?
You know, here's the way I take a look at it. All of our elected officials, including Mayor Bass and all the council members, they all need to be held accountable, but we also need to be fair and give them the time, to do the job. And so in Mayor Bass's case, with her commitments to get 17,000 people off the streets and get them into housing and whatnot, which we all know desperately needs to happen in the city. She said she would do that within her first year. I think, give her the time and the resources to get it done this year. She's about 6 months into it. And you, especially in the press, need to be holding all of our elected officials accountable, including her. But we have to give her the time to get the job done.
Okay, so that's the diplomatic answer, but do
it's
you
the right answer?
Yeah, but do you? I mean, come on, do you sit there? And I mean, you ran for mayor. It wasn't exactly a frictionless campaign for both of you, and words were said on both sides. Perhaps she regrets some, perhaps you regret some, but there must be days, I would think, when you sit there and you look about what she's doing and think, if I were in City Hall, that's not what I would do. Doesn't mean it would be better or worse, but not what you would do. What are those days?
Well, of course. I mean, that happens on a regular basis. You're absolutely right. We have very different styles, and we come from a very different background. And so I would be doing things differently. But again, to your point, that doesn't make it better or worse. It just makes it different. There needs to be an urgency. There's no doubt. I can't tell you, because I'm not in City Hall, the level of urgency or the level of quality of the people that, she has brought in to deal with this. But I can tell you this, we are living in the most entrepreneurial, most innovative city in the world with some of the smartest and most talented people. And this problem of homelessness is fixable. That's the only reason I ran, is because I knew it could be fixed and needs to be fixed. Desperately, we got more people coming onto the streets. We know that from the latest report from McKinsey. And we have more people dying on the streets and dying in Metro. And that's just not the way to be a great city or to treat people on the streets. And so I hope she's attacking it every day. I'm sure she is, with great urgency and skill. And I hope she's brought a lot of really good people in. But of course I would look at things differently, because you know, there's just a certain way that I like doing things. But she's the captain of the ship now, and we all should be rooting her on because we're all on the same ship. So I certainly hope she does a great job.
I think shortly before the election, you were a guest on In Depth, and we asked you if you lose, and Mayor Karen Bass asked you for help, and I believe your answer was, of course you would. You would help if asked. Have you reached out to Mayor Bass since the election to offer your help? And if you did, what kind of response did you get?
Well, or the other way around.
Yeah.
She reached out to you.
We have talked, and, you know, my statement is really clear. My intentions are really clear. I love this city. I spent 40 years of my life working for this city, and I will continue to do that. I want to do things that are productive and meaningful and make a difference. There's certainly a lot of things that need to get done, and we'll see how that plays out. But we've spoken, but no details yet.
I mean, did she contact you? Did you contact her? What did you talk about?
She reached out to me. I won't give you the details of the conversation.
Give us the bullet points.
I believe in the privacy of private conversations.
Give us a thumbnail sketch.
Charles is a pit bull.
Give us a couple of words, Rick.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I feel like I'm in a depot.
There you go. All right. The deposition will continue with more with Rick Caruso coming up on In Depth. And we're back talking business with Rick Caruso, who is Mr. Business Mogul. I love it when we get the word mogul so much because we hear that word so often, and I don't know if I've ever liked it. Do you like the word mogul? Do you like being called a mogul?
No, I don't. I'm not even quite sure what it means. I'm not sure what it means.
It sounds like some kind of creature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I want to get off the homeless thing for a minute, not because it's not important. It is, as you pointed out, terribly important. But there are so many other things that a city the size of Los Angeles needs to be dealing with that sometimes I almost feel as if we've kind of lost sight of all those other things, that it's so laser focused in the campaign and even now in, Karen Bass being mayor, and perhaps it would have been the same if you were mayor, that we're so laser focused on the homelessness issue. I kind of wonder what else is out there that needs to be addressed and perhaps isn't being given the publicity it needs to get. And if so, what would those things be?
Well, I talked about it a lot, Charles, on the campaign. Affordable housing in the city is critically important. We have failed the residents of this city by not having affordable housing. Impacts small businesses, large. You can't hire people. They can't afford to live here. You know, and we need to get on that in this city. And it's not only housing for people who are homeless, it's housing for teachers and firefighters and police to live in the city. It's for people that are just graduating from college that are trying to get a job and live here. That can easily be fixed. I mean, I really do believe none of these problems are that complicated. Crime, obviously, is an issue, and we need to get it fixed. The complication there is hiring, but it can be done. We've done it before. We can do it again. We need to keep our city clean. There's some really basic things. I think the most important thing that America can do is make the city more livable and make it a happy place to be and people proud to live here and you want to grow your business here or move your business here. And unfortunately, we're doing the opposite. I think we're really pushing people and businesses out of the city. I think the tax, the ULA tax, is highly detrimental. We've got a lot of office buildings in downtown L.A., that are already in or about to go into foreclosure, that really impacts. You lose the daytime population, the office workers, because it's too dangerous to be downtown or perceived dangerous. Affects every small business, every vendor, every restaurant, every dry cleaner. So there's what the mayor and the city council have to do is you've got to multitask. You've got to have the skill set and the people around you to multitask. But and then you have these national issues. You know, we saw it play out in New York, which was just tragic, with Neely being killed. We have a mental health crisis in this country, and we certainly have one on the streets of our city. And that needs to be dealt with because you can't solve homelessness by just putting somebody in an apartment or a shelter if they don't have the services they need to survive. So there's a lot to do, but it's still the greatest city in the world. So, you know, let's get to business and get it done.
So you're going to run again for something, right?
Oh, I don't know.
Come on.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
Because you see, I'll tell you why I'm saying that. Because you are a man of means. You are a man with clearly a lot of opinions about how things should be. And you already have tried to run, or you did run and lost. It's hard for me to believe that you don't get up in the morning and think, you know, I could do something other than what I'm already doing as a public servant. So that's why when you say you haven't thought about it, I don't believe you.
Well, you always think about it. I mean, that's just I'm a human being. Uh-huh. Of course, uh-huh. I would think about it, but okay. That doesn't mean I'm going to run, Charles.
Yeah, but I may want.
You know, to be your partner. Maybe I'm going to try to get Rob's job and we can do a show together and have some fun.
Rob, can you leave?
Sure. I'll step up. I tell you what. Rick, you and I will trade places.
I would love
you can
that.
Do my job. I'll take control of your properties.
I would love it. I would probably fail miserably and you would succeed.
And you would have no more businesses left once I was done.
But you are doing stuff, even not being in public office, you are always doing stuff in terms of trying to do things from a civic responsibility point of view. And maybe you're, I don't know, reluctant to discuss some of it publicly, but discuss some of it publicly.
Well, listen, I'm always going to stay involved. I appreciate the question. And I'm staying connected to the people that are out there that I came to know and love and the businesses, particularly the small businesses. And we're doing a lot of things to help make sure that small businesses, I mean, look at what the city, this was a couple months ago, had this, one of the dumbest ideas in the world, that they're going to take away all the outdoor dining. They're going to start charging people $13,000 in an application fee. If you run a small restaurant, you can't stay in business. You're out of business. You know, so who is the genius that came up with that idea? So I did lean in on that, and it did sort of kill that and force the city to rethink it. I didn't do it in a mean way. I did it to be a voice to defend people that really feel like they don't have a voice. And I'm going to continue to do that in a very healthy, positive way. And certainly on our charitable fronts with Parlos Niños and Operation Progress, all of those things continue to be a priority. And I'm looking at doing a bunch of other stuff, you know, building affordable housing, but also mostly for the homeless. And do it in a way that we can be very cost effective and show a model that can be duplicated and help advance that cause.
All right, there. You heard it here on KNX in Depth. Rick Caruso still working hard, even though he lost an election. Not ready to announce his next campaign yet, soon.
And am I mistaken, but in the last segment, weren't you about to tell us what you and Karen Bass talked about?
No, yeah, I think you said you were going to tell us.
That's in the next segment.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, try it again.
All right. That's it with Rick Caruso. Thank you so much for joining us, sir. And we hope that you will come back soon. Let us know how
you're doing
and what else you're working on. And, of course, when you're ready to announce your campaign, please do it here.
It will be here.
That's
Thank you, L.A.
KNX In Depth. We'll be back tomorrow at 1 p.m.